Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
You know, I never thought that I would use the word buzz when referring to the Cleveland Browns, but the buzz around the Browns this offseason has been palpable. Good jungle word for you, clones. Look that up. The team that has won only one game in the last 2 years suddenly has got this positive energy all around it, this positive vibe all around it. And it's thanks in large part to the arrival of guys like Jarvis Landry, Tyrod Taylor, Baker Mayfield, and of course, the return of Josh Gordon. A ton of talent and a ton of juice right there. Hence the buzz. It's palpable. And I seriously can't wait to see what that offense looks like. An offense that's going to have Landry and Gordon on the same field at the same time. I can't wait for that. Except we're going to have to wait a little bit longer. Because Josh Gordon tweeted that while he is feeling great, both physically and mentally, he's going to miss a part of training camp. He'll miss the start of training camp, quote, as part of my overall health and treatment plan, end of quote. Then he goes on to write, quote, with the help of the NFL, NFLPA, and the Browns organization, I've been able to utilize the resources available to me that will ensure my well-being on and off the field. By continuing to follow the plan set up by our medical director and his team, and taking this time before this season starts, we believe it will help me maintain the progress I have made for not only today, but for many years to come, end quote. All right, that's really pretty interesting. Interesting and somewhat mysterious. You know, what do you make of that message? What do we read into that message? Exactly what is he saying? What is he not saying? Then you get a statement from Browns GM John Dorsey. That statement read in part, quote, we will continue to support Josh as he receives the care needed to maintain his progress. We are going to respect his privacy while he is away from the team, end quote. All right, so that doesn't help very much either. That did not shed much light either. So, bottom line, was there a failed test? Was there a relapse? Or is it a proactive move? What's the timetable for his return? You know, what's going on here? Let's go to the sources. Here come the sources. According to Tom Pelissero of NFL Media, a source told him that Gordon is, quote, absolutely not suspended, end quote. All right, good. But then again, league spokesman Brian McCarthy said that when it comes to Gordon, quote, we'll address the matter at the appropriate time, end quote. Uh-oh! I mean, what does that mean? We'll address the matter at the appropriate time. If that was just a way of saying that they're going to protect his privacy, wouldn't it be better just to say we're going to protect his privacy? Saying that they'll address the matter at the appropriate time makes it seem like there might be something else going on there. But other sources have told Adam Schefter that that is not the case. They've indicated that Gordon is seeking extra counseling to deal with his mental health and anxiety. So where does that leave us? Again, we don't know why he's stepping away. We don't know for how long it's going to be. But if it really is not about a failed test, and it really is about being proactive and seeking counseling to address issues before they become issues, then that's great. That's awesome. That's really impressive, if that's what that is. We're talking about a guy who has battled addiction for years. And if this same guy is now taking proactive steps to make sure that he does not get into a spot where he's tempted to use again, then that's huge. That's massive. If that's what that is, I can't tell you how much I respect that. Because it would be a lot easier to just say, you know, I'm in a good spot on a team that might be good. I'm just going to fight through this. But instead, if this is what this is, he's acknowledging how big the battle is, that the battle might in fact be bigger than him. In the past, he has said that he has used substances to help him deal with anxiety. And if instead he's using counseling instead of substances, that's a big step. If he really is doing this as a proactive step to preserve the gains and the progress that he's made, if this guy's putting his mental, physical, and emotional health above football, then that's great. Even if it means he's going to miss the start of training camp. But again, it's hard to know because we don't know everything at this stage. I know this. Here's what I do know. This much I do know. If your immediate reaction to the story is, what does this do for my fantasy team? Then my immediate reaction is, you got to get a life. Stop whatever you're doing right now. If you're at work, take a bathroom break. If you're driving, pull over. Do whatever you have to do to find yourself a mirror. Take a long, hard look in that mirror. And what do you see looking back at you? Are you proud of that? Because if your reaction to the Josh Gordon news is, does this drop him below Jarvis Landry on my draft board? Then I'm not proud of you. Don't get me wrong. Fantasy football is awesome. It really is. But you know what else is great? Compassion. Supporting somebody in their battle against addiction. Whether you know them or not. Caring about people for who they are as people and not just how many points they're worth in a PPR league. But, if I'm the one who doesn't get it and you still really want to know who you should draft instead of Josh Gordon, then go ahead and check with my dude, Alvin DeLauro. He is the man with all of those answers. Hit him up on Twitter, at Alvin DeLauro. At Alvin DeLauro. Just do it. In short, that's a long way of saying I really don't know. I don't know what's going on with Josh Gordon because it's all very cryptic. It's all very mysterious. However, if he did not test positive and he did not relapse and he's doing this because he's putting his mental health first and he's being proactive, man, big tip of the hat. Good for you. That's a great move. That's a massive move if that's what he's doing. I love it if that's what he's doing. Jerry Kramer joining us. So we are now a week and a half away from you being inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame on August 4th. How you feel right now, Jerry?
I'm running out of words, Jimmy. Euphoric is good. Sensational will work. Maybe the best ever is possible. So I'm just having an incredibly good time and really looking forward to the Canton induction. I'm getting just a teeny-weeny bit nervous about the whole thing, but feel really good.
That's great. Jerry Kramer joining us. So what about that whole thing? Jerry, what kind of thoughts do you have when you think about what it's going to be like to be on that stage, wearing your jacket, giving your speech, and then seeing your bust?
Jimmy, I've been thinking about this for about 45 years, you know. I've been up, I've been down, I've been over, I've been out, I've been around, I've been through, I've been every emotion, every kind of thought you can have on it. So I'm kind of under control here for a little bit. The emotion, the excitement is starting to build, and so I suspect it will continue to get more and more intense as the days go by. And I've got an awful lot of friends and family. Most of my family is going to be there, and friends from high school, from all college, all along the way. So it'll be a wonderful event, but it'll be a pressure event. It'll be a maybe my voice will change a little bit like it did every once in a while before. I suddenly became a high soprano instead of a bass. But I'm looking forward to it, basically.
Green Bay Packers legend Jerry Kramer joining us once again. You know, Jerry, when I've talked to other members of the Hall of Fame, one of the things that they talk about is how exciting it is to be on the same stage as all the other legends of the game and to be recognized as one of their peers. When you played for the Packers and you have the kind of career that you have, you're already a legend. But what do you think it's going to feel like to be surrounded by dozens of other guys from the rest of the league in those gold jackets?
Well, I thought about that for a long time, too. And I thought about being there with Bart and Paul and Jimmy and Willie and Robbie and Wood and Adderley and Jordan and, you know, all the guys that are in there. And that's maybe the one area that is a little bit disappointing is that a lot of those guys are now gone or won't be there. So, but I've been getting emails and congratulations from a lot of guys that are going to be there, and I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful event. And, you know, it's kind of, Jimmy, when I was selected as the only guard on the all-time 50-year team, I kind of anticipated that I might go in the hall at that time. And then, you know, over the years, it kind of dwindled and kind of wore off and kind of a little anger from time to time, a little disappointment from time to time. So I just, I'm looking forward to seeing everybody and saying hey and hanging out and doing the whole thing and letting my family experience the inner sanctum. So I'm just looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great moment.
The Tuesday edition of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by Fan Exchange. Don't look now, but we're in the dead middle of summer. Halfway through, halfway gone. Have you made the most of it yet? Have you gotten to a game, a show, a concert? Bust on over to fanexchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. A great experience. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. There's no getting to the gate and then worrying about getting in. Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the best prices at fanexchange.com. Use the promo code ROME. Again, promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. It's going to be a great moment. Jerry Kramer joining us. You know, Jerry, you've mentioned your family a couple of times. Your daughter Alicia is going to present for your induction. Knowing the amount of work that she put into advancing and supporting your candidacy for the Hall of Fame, what does it mean to you to have her presenting you to everybody else?
Well, you know, it's actually a tribute to the Packer Hall or the Green Bay Packer fan. They have worked endlessly, tirelessly for me to get into the Hall. Joe Horrigan, the president, president of the Hall, when I was nominated as a senior finalist, got on the phone with me and he said, "Jerry, this nomination is going to reduce my incoming mail by 90%. Those Packer fans have questioned my sanity, my heritage, my ancestry, everything about me. I am so tickled for you to get in the Hall." So it's a tribute to the Packer fans, too, Jimmy. They have been just tireless in knocking on the door and demanding entry. And so it's a great combination, and they have been just wonderful. I tell everybody that there's been incredibly positive responses, and virtually every response has been positive, except for that one guy from Chicago that said I was off, or from Dallas, who said I was offsides in the ice bowl. So I quit worrying about him a long time ago.
Jerry, how'd that make you feel? One of the greatest blocks in the history of the NFL. You and I have talked about that so many times. And somebody suggesting you were offsides. How'd that make you feel?
Well, he just is stupid. That's all. We're going to have to forgive him, and maybe we can have him committed or something. But, you know, that the main emotion after that block, Jimmy, was relief. You know, relief. I knew I was called on. I knew I had suggested it. I knew what the situation was. And now I got to perform. I mean, it's critical. And so I just had a great sense of relief that when I turned around and saw Bart in the end zone, oh, boy, was that a wonderful moment.
One of the all-time great blocks, that was on Jethro Pugh. We're talking to Jerry Kramer. You know, Jerry, one of your induction classmates is Terrell Owens, and he's not going to be in Canton for the weekend. And you said it yourself. You kind of understand what he's gone through. You've experienced some anger over the years. What do you make of his decision not to attend?
You know, Terrell has a point, Jimmy. He called me yesterday or the day before and spent quite a bit of time on the phone telling me that what he was upset about was the voting process, the kind of process that I was subjected to. Now, I was the all-time team, and yet it took him 50 years to put me in there. How come? Is there some homers in there that won't vote for the best player? They want to vote for their player? So he had a chat with Mr. Baker about the voting process and who controlled it and why weren't there some players in there and the people who knew the game instead of a group of people that he doesn't control and has no sway over. So Terrell was trying to say, hey, you know, if a guy belongs in the Hall of Fame, he belongs in the Hall of Fame. If he's got the numbers and the performance on the field, then that should be the only consideration. And it's not a consideration as to what team you played for, what position you played. and those other things that we often use. And certainly it's not a case of, I'm from Dallas and I'll never vote for that Green Bay guy. So that's kind of where Terrell was coming from. And I don't have an issue with that. I think that could only be better for the Hall.
You know, I would imagine you listen to everything he had to say and you could empathize and sympathize with him. Would you like him to be there, though, with the rest of the group?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it would be good for him. I think later in his years and his on down the road when he mellows a little bit and thinks about the moment, I think he will feel like he should have gone. And I wish he would. I wish he would change his mind. I wish he'd join us. But, Jimmy, this whole thing is an incredible roller coaster. Am I in? Am I out? And people used to come up to me and, hey, Jerry, Hall of Famer, huh? I said, no, I'm not in the Hall of Fame. Well, how come? Well, I don't know. I haven't been voted in the Hall of Fame. Well, why not? Well, it's just one of those things. Well, and I was introduced as a Hall of Famer, and that was embarrassing because I had to go through this whole long litany of excuses and reasons and stuff why I wasn't in the Hall. Commissioner Goodell called me one day when we were working on the pension disability issues in the NFL former players, and he said, Jerry, are you going to Canton? No, I'm not, Commissioner. Well, how come? Commissioner, I'm not in the Hall of Fame. You're not? Well, what's that about? How come?
Wow.
And then, believe this, John Hanna calls me the next year, and John's been in the Hall for 25 years. Jerry, you're going to Canton? No, not going to Canton. How come? John, I'm not in the Hall. You're not? So, you know, it's just an embarrassing thing. It's an uncomfortable thing. And I'm certainly glad those days are over.
I was going to say, Jerry, you are now. You are now. You will be soon. Before you go, Jerry, you and I have talked over the years about the impact Vince Lombardi had on you. He passed away from colon cancer at the age of 57. He had been dealing with some digestive issues for a while, but the story goes he was not comfortable with the idea of a screening for that type of thing. I know it's something you've been advocating for quite some time. What is your message to anybody who does not feel comfortable with that process?
Well, Jimmy, the colon cancer is a deadly form of cancer. It's not something, if it's at a certain stage, you pretty much die from it. And so it just makes common sense to have a test for it and to try to detect it at an early stage where they can make a difference. And Cologuard is a kit that allows you to gather a sample in the privacy of your own house and your own bathroom and send it in. And if you have a certain cancerous cells in the stool or a DNA, then they can determine that there's a possibility of you having colon cancer, and you can go to your regular doc and go through that whole process. But it's a very simple process, very reasonable in terms of how much is my life worth, and it's just something that I wish Coach Lombardi would have done. You know, he died at the ripe old age of 57, and he had a lot of life left in him and a lot of wonderful things he could have accomplished. And so Cologuard, a wonderful product, and take a look at it. Just check it out.
Time is precious. Time is valuable. Time is money. Time is what Stamps.com gives you even more of. I can mail any letter, any package by using just my computer and printer, and then the mailman will come and pick it up. I love it. So what you need to do is create your own Stamps.com account. You can do so in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Once again, I have used Stamps.com for a long time because it is so fast, it is so easy, it is so convenient, and it does save me money. Right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. All you have to do is go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. Once again, I love this service. I know you will too. Go to Stamps.com and enter jungle. Let's talk swimming. A swimmer gets suspended. That's not news. a swimmer being suspended for violating U.S. anti-doping agency rules. Still not very big news. It happens. A swimmer being suspended for violating U.S. anti-doping agency rules because he posted a pic of himself on Instagram violating the rules? Now that's Ryan Lochte news. I got to walk you through that because this is probably the most Ryan Lochte story ever. More Ryan Lochte than when he broke out those absurd wing sneakers. More Ryan Lochte than when he caused that international incident by lying about a robbery at a gas station in Brazil. Because this, well, listen to the statement from USADA. It announced today that, and this is the actual quote, announced today that Ryan Lochte of Gainesville, Florida, an athlete in the sport of swimming, has accepted a 14-month sanction for his use of a prohibited method. On May 24th, 2018, Lochte, 33, posted an image on social media depicting himself receiving an intravenous infusion. A subsequent investigation, with which Lochte fully cooperated, revealed that Lochte received an intravenous infusion of permitted substances at an infusion clinic in a volume greater than 100 milliliters in a 12-hour period without therapeutic use exemption. Ryan Lochte posted a pic of himself in a leather Lazy Boy getting an IV drip with the caption, "Athletic recovery with some hashtag IV drip. Revival IV lounge hashtag vitamins." There's a picture of this guy, a picture of an Olympian getting an IV drip that he posted himself. It is incredible. I'm not sure what I love the most about that pic. The big stupid grin on his face as he's incriminating himself, or the fact that he just tossed in a hashtag vitamins at the end of that post. Man, so much to love. I know what I love the most. The thing that I love the most is the fact that our boy is back. Hell yes.
Hell.
Ryan freaking Lochte is back, and he's doing Ryan Lochte things. Man, I didn't realize it until just now. But the 2 years without Ryan Lochte is like a lifetime. And I sure as hell was not going to be able to make it to 2020 without hearing from this genius again. Man, God bless this cat. What a beauty. I mean, a one of a kind, an American original. This guy is a beauty. Because in case you forgot, this dude is a legit clown. I'm talking an Olympic caliber doofus. A dope. Listen, mistakes will happen. Young people can get a little loose on social media and make a blunder. Except Lochte is 33. Next month, Ryan Lochte will be 34.
34.
Not exactly young in terms of years on this planet. But that's Ryan Lochte. Vintage Lochte. And I, for one, am pumped. Because it tells me my man still got it. You know, you sometimes wonder if the greats lose a step as they get older. But this guy, Lochte, he hasn't lost a damn thing. Lochte is still living his best Lochte life. Who else would get themselves banned for 14 months because of an Instagram post? Just marinate on that for a minute. Think about that. Who else could pull that off? Who else would put a post on Instagram of themselves doing something that would get themselves banned? That's not a hack. He's a hack. That wasn't a hack. You see, what I'm getting at is this guy doesn't act dumb. He is dumb. I mean, let's not forget, this is the same guy who gave America, no, the same guy who gave the entire world this incredible effort at a catchphrase. Gia!
Gia!
I mean, like all great things, even Gia has a backstory. Back in 2009, Ryan Lochte was asked what that meant, and the answer is simple. Quote, "It means like, almost like everything, like happy, like if you have a good swim, you say, Gia, like it's good. So I guess it means good." There you go. You satisfied? Are you done clowning this guy for coming up with a catchphrase that doesn't make sense? Because it makes total sense. Gia means like, almost, like everything. The Swedish language has 25 words for snow. Ryan Lochte's language has one word for everything. Hey, Sweden, tell me how my earth tastes. Scoreboard, Sweden, look up at it. Lochte for the win. And before you go in on this guy, let's get one thing very clear. Gia is very versatile. It can be used in so many different ways. Isn't that right, Ryan?
Gia.
Dope. It's no wonder this got a reality show, which led to this amazing interview with Good Day Philly back in the day, where he broke down the architecture of the house that he was in.
What are you doing?
What am I not doing?
Okay.
I'm a lot different than any other kind of Olympian. I mean, there's so much more to me than swimming. And I like to go out and have fun, like to go dancing, hang out with my friends. I like doing fun stuff like playing basketball, skateboarding.
What kind of line could somebody say? What would get your attention? Oh, really?
Good question. My philosophy is if you're a man at night, you got to be a man in the morning.
I like that. I have a feeling my co-host, that's what you live by, right? If you're a man at night, then you got to be a man in the morning.
I mean, I was brushing my teeth and the camera was there. I was like, what are you guys doing?
On reality shows, they follow you into
the
bathroom. So you have to tell them what you're doing.
Well, I mean, I guess there's a mirror with a sink, and then you have the bathroom.
Ryan, good luck to you. We'll be watching.
Thank you.
Oh, man, I can't do it. I got four.
Seriously, how are they going to get enough material?
You're so going to get in trouble.
Wait.
It's gonna come off.
Check her out.
We got a lash off.
That anchor's laughing so hard, her eyelashes are falling out. But that's the beauty of Ryan Lochte, right? For years now, I've been trying to figure out who is Ryan Lochte. How do you define this guy? I don't even need to waste my time on it. He can do it for me.
What defines me? Ryan Lochte.
Hell yes. What defines me? Ryan Lochte. Sounds like the dude didn't even understand the question. It sounds like he didn't understand the question that he asked himself. Or if it seems like that, you're wrong. Oh, he understood it. He just dropped a king-sized riddle on your dome, and now it's up to you to figure it out. You jump out of the pool on that. And if you can't wrap your mind around that basic puzzle, there was the time. Remember that one time where he said, quote, I guess you would say I'd be like the Michael Phelps of swimming if he wasn't there. Yeah, right. So if Michael Phelps weren't here, I would be the Michael Phelps of swimming. Except there wouldn't be a Michael Phelps. So if there was no Michael Phelps, Ryan Lochte would be the Michael Phelps of swimming. But instead, there is a Michael Phelps of swimming. So Ryan Lochte is the Michael Phelps of dopes. Gia!
Gia, boy. Aw, Gia.
Dude got himself suspended for 14 months. By posting a picture of himself on his Instagram account doing something he's not allowed to do. Man, the most Ryan Lochte thing ever. Yeah. My man is dumb. That is incredible. Welcome back. You were missed, bro. You were missed. Well done. Yeah. Welcome back. Vitamins. Vitamins. Suspension. Back to the kiddie pool for 14 months. See you back in your mid to late 30s.
Yeah.
Boy, I've always said that social can be really dangerous, especially with that guy or somebody like that guy.
Yeah.
My man's not smart. And by not smart, I mean pretty dumb.
Yeah.
Hurricane season is underway across most of the country, bringing extreme wind and rain with little to no warning. It is critical to make sure your generators, power washers, chainsaws, John boats, and other emergency equipment are ready to use when you need them most. Whether you live in a high-impact area or not, planning in advance is a crucial step in hurricane preparedness. Stabil, America's number one fuel stabilizer and ethanol treatment, making sure your equipment starts when you need it the most. We are joined right now by Jay Williams. Jay, so good to have you back. How are you?
JR, how about yourself, man?
Doing great, Jay. Let me jump right into it. You know, there's a lot I want to talk to you about, but why don't we start with that docuseries that you worked on with LeBron James. In it, you served as an assistant basketball coach at Central High School in Newark, New Jersey. How did the opportunity first come about?
Well, I didn't serve as an assistant coach. I served more as like a mentor, somebody that came in and came out. And this whole thing came about because I got a call from Spring Hill, a guy named Jamal Henderson, and Maverick Carter, who works with LeBron. And I've known Maverick since I've been in about the ninth grade. We played five-star basketball together in Honesdale. And Mav and I have always been looking for a way to somewhat work together. And when he told me about how this was going to be impactful, more of a docuseries, and one of the things I've always loved about the MJR is that, you know, LeBron, when he came up, LeBron could have easily just left all of his friends behind. But what he did was he empowered them to intellectually to be more, and he challenged them, and they all rose to the occasion. Maverick Carter, you know, you talk about his own agent, Rich Paul, all of these guys have really stepped up in a huge capacity, and they want to provide that same opportunity for some younger kids from areas that they were from. So, you know, we started talking about it. I love the concept, and then I sat down with Michael J. Warren, who was a director who did Jay-Z's Fade to Black, and he started really breaking down how he wanted to shoot it. And how he didn't want anything to be organized beforehand. He just really wanted to catch the raw interaction. And he wanted to showcase these kids so they were no longer just white noise, that we had to listen to their stories. And we had to find a way to build blueprints to help them achieve their dreams. And once I heard that, man, I was hooked. I was locked.
Jay Williams joining us. Wow. All right, Jay, let me ask you about Coach Sean McCrae. Now, you worked with him. For those who have not seen the series yet, how would you describe Coach OG and the impact that he has on players' lives?
Well, first off, I give OG and I give Principal Brown, the principal of Central High School, all the credit in the world. And I want to give them an applause because, you know, those people, those foot soldiers on the ground day to day, they're the ones really fighting in the trenches for these kids. As it relates to OG, JR, he is a teddy bear in a lot of ways, and then he is a fierce tiger. I know those are two extremes, but that's exactly who he is. And he's committed to helping these kids. He's a guy that was in a gang when he was younger called the Zoo Crew. And he made a lot of bad decisions in his life, but he's turned his life around. And he's really committed his life to these kids. And he wants to help shape and mold them. So, look. They're the real heroes. All I did, I came in and I amplified things they already said. I just said it in a different vernacular, kind of using my status. But to be able to work with them and see how they had to really try to, you know, mold these kids who were very malleable and try to shape their character was truly a tremendous opportunity.
We're talking to Jay Williams, featured in a new YouTube original series called Best Shot. Jay, what about life away from the court? What was that like for the players?
Well, that's what this whole thing is about. You know, Jim, basketball is just a hook. It's about when you have a 15, 16-year-old kid named Quan who looks into the camera and says, you know, my dad's never been around. My brother's in and out of jail. It all falls on me. Are you kidding me? At 15, 16 years old, when you have a kid named Hottie who loses his dad while we're on a team trip, you have a kid named Isaiah who lives by himself at 17 years old. It's paying rent for a place, looking to find a job, trying to get money, still trying to go to school, trying to go, you know, to college one day. These kids have the responsibilities of adults at 15, 16, 17 years old. So to be able to try to help lessen that burden and talk them through it and understand where they're coming from, that's what this life is all about. We all need to do more.
Talking to Jay Williams. You know, Jay, at one point in the season, you wrote a personal letter to every member of the team where you broke down their strengths as a player, but more importantly, their value as people. What were those letters like, and what did you want those players to take away from those letters?
Well, I mean, there was a letter for every individual on the team, and first off, it was very time-consuming because I didn't want to rush the process. And, you know, I know a lot of these kids have never had a letter written to them before. So, you know, the first couple of weeks, Jim, just watching them and seeing the way they interact, seeing how they engage one another, seeing if they actually thought about things before they did, I was just assessing information, taking down notes in my journal every night. And then to be able to write them and tell them that I see you. I see who you are. I understand a little bit more about you. And this is how I would do it if I were you. These are the kind of decisions I would start to make or I would start to think about if I was in your situation. I think just doing that, taking the time to think about them all individually and their own stories and their goals about where they want to be was a great connective tissue for us to build a relationship. And then obviously we went into goal setting for the team and goal setting for them personally. Because I wanted the experience not only for me to get to know them, but I wanted them to know each other. The only way you fight for each other is if you know what each other wants to accomplish. And then all of a sudden there's accountability there with your teammates. Because now if you see somebody that's taking them off their path, you're saying, hey, hold on a second. You wrote down on your piece of paper on your individual goal that you wanted to do this. Well, this is not helping you achieve your individual goal. So to build that camaraderie with accountability was a very special moment for us as a bond.
Jay Williams joining us. You know, Jay, I'm really curious, having worked on this project with LeBron, what is something that you learned about him and perhaps his process or the way he approaches life and work that maybe you didn't know about him before?
You know, Jim, just like you, I get a chance to talk to a lot of athletes all the time, and I don't find that a lot of athletes are present or that they have had the chance to think through about what they stand for, or maybe they have, but they end up saying a lot of things that sound politically correct because it sounds the right way, but they're not really being themselves. When I got a chance to spend a day with LBJ, I was blown away with, first off, how cerebral of a person he was, and how he felt obligated to do something bigger for the communities, right? The socioeconomical, you know, situations that he came from, that he can relate to, and talking about some of the people that have uplifted him in his life and him recognizing that there's no way he would ever be in the position he is today without the smaller lessons, the nuances, the intricate details of some of the lessons he broke down just thoroughly blew my mind. Right, I was like, wow, okay, I'm having a conversation with somebody I feel like who's been doing media for 20 years. I mean, essentially he has. But that kind of thoughtfulness, it took my appreciation for, like, I could care less about who LeBron was as an athlete. It took my appreciation exponentially higher up levels for the person he is and what kind of legacy he wants to leave for his family and for all the people he wants to help them achieve their dreams.
You know, Jay, it sounds a little like something you might say, well, I'm sure you have, of course, but it sounds like something you might say if you spent some time with Kobe Bryant in terms of hearing the way he works and the way he processes things, which brings me to one last thing. What do you make of the fact that murals of LeBron in Los Angeles keep getting ruined, allegedly by Kobe fans?
I think that Kobe fans are a little bit simple-minded at times, and it's easy to look at the scenario and that Kobe was the greatest of all time, and that's fine if that's what you believe. But LeBron has never said that he's better than Kobe or that he is the bigger king in L.A. than Kobe. That is the media. So, like, I don't understand how fans can take things that the media says and then all of a sudden spin that individually towards LeBron. LeBron wants to win championships. He recognizes that he still has a lot to learn. That's why he came to play for Magic Johnson, you know, Jenny Buss, and to be mentored by a guy like Kobe Bryant. So all that hate doesn't need to be portrayed towards LeBron. It should be sent towards the media because the media is the one that's spinning the narrative.
AJ Boye is my guest. AJ, good to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good. So you had this breakout season last year. The team had a monster year last year. So how is the offseason training treating you, and how good does it feel to be getting ready for another season right now?
Training's been going good. Just been working a lot on technique. Some of my weaknesses, have to study the film a little bit. It was more of a mental approach this year, especially this offseason. But it's very exciting. You know, we start camp tomorrow. I'm just glad to be back with the guys and just ready for this season.
You know, AJ, I mentioned that you had a huge, huge year last year. You went to the Pro Bowl. You were named a second-team All-Pro. It was a huge year, but was there any part of you that felt like you should have been first-team All-Pro?
Yeah, most definitely. But at the end of the day, I can't control what other people had or what they voted for. I'm just glad that I had a teammate, you know, the corner on the other side, Jalen Ramsey, that I was able to represent. So we still had two All-Pro corners, and it's just extra motivation. But the main goal for me, especially on our team, is just to win the Super Bowl.
AJ Boye joining us. In fact, if you go back, when you signed with Jacksonville as a free agent, they were coming off a 3-win season. So at that time, what did you see in them that made you feel like something was about to turn around and that you might play a big role in that turnaround?
I just saw a lot of potential, especially on defense, you know, playing against them two times a year. I did my research on them. You know, they lost a lot of games by less than 7 points. They had the lead in the fourth quarter. So I just wanted to know what could I do from an individual aspect to help the team out and just finish on plays and everything. And, you know, that's what their league is 8-8. So you got to come out there and just grind through the tough ones. And that's one thing that we did last year. We're definitely going to have to do that again this year.
AJ Boyer joining us. So considering how close you came last season, is anything less than a Super Bowl a disappointment this season?
Yes, most definitely. You know, we have a lot of high expectations for ourselves. And you can see from the approach that we're having, we're not worried about what we did last year. Even though everyone talks about it, we're more focused on just finishing, you know, fourth quarter, finishing towards the end of the season. That's the main thing. The Super Bowl is what we really want, and we see how close we were, so we're trying to go for it.
You know, you were number 35 on the NFL's list of the top 100 players, but before we get into that ranking, I've got to ask you something. Something that Charles James said in the video, he said he used to call you Bum-yay when you'd mess up, and he'd say, dude, you're playing like a bum right now. I mean, dude, is that true? And what did you make of that at the time?
No, that's not true. He used to say that when it came towards playing Madden. I thought it was funny at the same time, but, you know, me and Charles are close. You know, we was always watching each other every time we was making plays. When I saw it on Top 100, it was pretty funny. So, I mean, people probably want to go with it. It's fine by me, but no.
Hey, dude, that's why I had you clear that up. I was not going to just go with that. I want you to clear that up. I'm glad you did clear that up. AJ Boyer joining us. You know, when you and I talked during the season, we talked about your journey to get to this point. But as you look back on where you were coming out of UCF and being undrafted, now you're a Pro Bowler. How proud are you of what you've done so far? I mean, I know you've got work to do, but how proud of you or proud are you of where you are right now?
I'm very proud. You know, a lot of people can't say they took the same path as I did. Another corner that did it was Chris Harris Jr. And, you know, he'll tell you also it's tough, you know, coming in undrafted. You have people who, you know, are first rounders who automatically play above you, play ahead of you. You just have to wait for your opportunity. And luckily my last year in Houston, I took advantage of it and I recognized it. But it was really much of a grind, but it really tests how much you love the game and your faith in everything. And that's one thing I did was just stay focused.
AJ, I get that the draft is an inexact science. I get that there are mistakes that are made. But how did everybody miss that badly on you?
Maybe because, you know, I went to UCF and we don't get enough credit as we speak. We're just not being talked about. So, you know, we go undefeated and we still don't get a lot of respect. Luckily, we had some people there that got drafted, like Shaquem Griffin, Jordan Atkins. We also had a receiver that was drafted from there. So hopefully, you know, they just start to notice us. Maybe if I went to a bigger school, things would have changed. But at the end of the day, I can't control that.
AJ, you mentioned Shaq Griffin. God, I love this guy. And I was talking to him. I don't want to be that guy to say that I was talking to him before that combine where he just absolutely showed up and showed out. But we did. I had such profound admiration for that guy. How do you think that Shaq Griffin projects on the next level? How do you think he'll do in the NFL?
I'm excited to watch him play. He's a dog. You see on the film, he has a lot of effort. He's athletic. He can run. He has great football IQ, him and his brother. So being in that system, in Seattle, it's definitely going to thrive for them, and I'm excited to watch them play.
You know, when you call a guy a dog like that, I know it's the highest form of praise. What do you mean by that when you call a guy a dog? He's a dog.
Nobody's seeing him. Nobody's messing with him. That's the type of guy you line up across. They scared to mess with him. They're not going to tell you that, but inside they already know. And if you watch him on film, he just makes plays wherever he's at. And I love to see that. I was watching UCF a lot last year.
AJ Boyer joining us. Man, he does. He makes plays all over the field. Now, you talked about some of the things you were working on the offseason. One way to get better in the offseason, and you've been posting some absolutely ridiculous videos, like the 44-inch single-leg box jump that you hit recently. I mean, this is amazing. What's your mindset when it comes to offseason training, and what about that move in particular?
Just push myself to the limit. Just, you know, working on explosiveness. When I was in Miami with my trainer down there, Dave, I did a jump off 60-inch box also. You know, he was definitely trying to push me towards the end of the workout, and that's one of my things. I just like to be pushed, and that's the main thing. I feel like it translates over.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that, I mean, you've got your trainer pushing you, but how much of that goes back to the work and the training you used to do with your father, Steve, back in the day? What were those sessions like?
those were just, I thought I was on punishment sessions. Running a lot of hills at 5, 6 in the morning. You know, he had a different approach. He was working in a prison, so his main thing that he would always tell me was the last thing he wanted for me to be is the same prison that he worked at, so he made sure I stay out of trouble. I worked out at the prison. He used to try to push me a lot, had me doing push-ups at a young age, so I was definitely used to it, but it was mentally draining, but it helped me out, especially in the long run.
All right, so he played at Sam Houston State, and as you point out, he goes on to become a federal corrections officer. I mean, what kind of an impact did that have? What was it like for you to work out of the prison, too? Like, what types of things did you see, and what kind of an impact did that have on you?
You know, I was the place that we worked out at was right outside the prison where all the correctional officers work. So, you know, every time we drive up, we see the prison. You go around, and you just see the gate where everyone's at and things like that. And you just, that's one thing that you never wanted to be a part of. I remember saying that to myself at an early age. My dad would always bring it up. I would talk to some of his COs. And, you know, they was just always saying just to put the work in, stay out of trouble and everything. Just always the same message. So if you keep hearing that over and over, you're going to mentally think about that a lot.
AJ Boye joining me for a few more moments. You know, also, when you came out of college, like a lot of young guys coming out, you know, if you're going to play right, you have to eat right, right? It's all about what you put in your system. And like a lot of young guys coming out, you didn't really know, maybe you weren't as educated on what you should eat and what kind of fuel you should put into your body. When did you start thinking about cleaning your diet up a little bit? What kind of changes did you make? And did you notice a difference immediately?
After my third year, you know, I had, after my second year, I had surgery, and then going into my third year, I felt a little out of shape. So I just started watching some of the veterans in Houston and how they were going about things. You know, they had a chef. They would eat all the healthy things. And that's one thing that I started to do. I noticed that, you know, if you want to get the results, you're really going to have to invest in it. And that's one thing that I started doing, investing in what I was eating. The type of treatment and everything I was getting, and I just saw it start. I saw it starting to work on the field. So, you know, I definitely bought in real easy. But, you know, coming out of college, you eat a lot of junk food. You just go out there and perform, and it really doesn't matter. But at the next level, you're going against the best of the best. So all that's important, from sleep to nutrition, working out.
Yeah, I just played a video from the Players Tribune on CBS Sports Network. And, I mean, you can't be clean all the time. You did a video for the Players Tribune about your cheat day and your love of chicken and waffles. It looked like a blast. So how do you approach that cheat day when you finally do earn it? And then how much fun is it when you're in the middle of that thing?
Oh, it's exciting. You know, you get to eat whatever you want.
That is exciting.
So what I had, they had Jacob's Pickles. That was probably the biggest piece of chicken I've ever had, but the mac and cheese, you know. But even then, after I eat that, I try to make sure I just leave the like one meal a day. Still make sure I'm drinking a lot of water, just staying hydrated, because I know starting Monday and Tuesday, you know, after the games, I got to get back to what I was doing the right way. Just make sure my mind is right, my body's feeling good and everything like that.
Why not, right? Let's go to, you know what, let's just do it. Let's go to Parody Larry. I would imagine Parody Larry has got a thought or two or a song or two about the smack off. Lawrence, what's up, Larry?
Hey, Jim, how you doing, buddy?
Great.
Hey, awesome Vance smack off this year, and I want to prop Hawk for doing a great job in the inaugural one. He set up the calls beautifully. And a big shout-out to my man Beach in the Fort Greene Bar hosting the smack off party. We had Golden Bake Warrior leading a bunch of clones, and I even did a parody just for the occasion and got racked. So, you know, this was one of the toughest fields ever, and we had Steve Carbone bring back Kaplan Asian, Mike and Indy, and Mark in Hollywood came in strong, and the two-time champ brought some heat, but the three-peat just fell short for the Laguna Beach belly. We actually had on the scoreboard that Kelly and Fairfax was updating Rick and Buffalo in the lead, but then the Bick showed up late, proved what a thoroughbred he is, spitting out straight fire, kicking it into high gear, and blowing by the field down the stretch. So this one's for the new king of smack. The smack-up was a lot of fun. Look who won. He came in and he got it done. Brad and Corona, Lady Cones, they both got run. Both got run. Queens and Nikkei and even South Mouth Verona, Rick and Buffalo. Punk is dead. Some bitch Bodie Flame. Canadians, they suck. Guess who's back? To number one, Brad. Woo!
That's not a good call. No. don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Well, Larry, that's your best one in a while, but still terrible for anybody else. Anybody else. That is not a tough act to follow. If I were you, I'd call right now, whoever you are. That is not a hard act to follow. My man Matt in L.A. is going to kill it. Matt, you made it in. How are you?
That's the Mac. Hey, thanks for the vine, Pimp. From El Toro to El Salvador, Laguna to Laos. You're welcome. That Matt in L.A. montage got them chlorineas climaxing as usual. And how long till Chatsworth erects a Jimmy G statue? You know, not very long, Pimp. But that's not why I called. I got to give it up to Smackoff 24, man. Kind of like that myth that Jimmy G was waxing and taxing last week in Bev Hills. The Smackoff seems to get better with age. From Brad and Les.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Matt, my man, there's so many things wrong with that telephone call and literally nothing right.
Good night now!